We're about to be live.
Are we not?
Now we're live.
What's up?
It's always fun, live shows. I thought we were live, and now we are. Live is in effect. Yeah, so I kind of thought it would be fun to try to premiere it right now, but I have to get the file open and everything. Let me see if I can. And I think it'd be
this
fun
is
to try
how
to.
How the vegan sausage is made, ladies and gentlemen.
This is how the vegan sausage. Did you see that thing that that Mike Perry guy when he was eating the sausages and he was like, "This tastes like cardboard, and this one is luscious and meaty." And the guy's like, "Well, they're both vegan, my friend."
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, I thought that was a fun one.
I like the one where they go to the grocery store with a baby piglet and they're like, "Hey, you want to try?" Or no, they start, they're like, "Hey, you want a sample of our sausage?" And the person's like, "Yeah, sure, I'll sample your sausage." They pull out a little baby piglet and put it in a box and then pull a crank and sausage. And people are, they're horrified. And it's such a.
How could you possibly?
Yeah, it's a clear illustration of this stuff. You know, when it's right there, people don't want to do it. Your values are already vegan.
Yes. Well, that's the way I feel. I've always felt that, like, if people are already, you know, people say, "Well, you're not born vegan, you're not born into a social movement." It's like, yeah, but you're born respecting other people's rights. I really do think that that's inherent in our, because I don't know. I saw a preview for The Whale, which I want to talk with you about, because in the preview for The Whale, he's like, people can't help but care. They're just like that. People can't help it. And that was the preview for the new movie, the Aronofsky film. And yeah, of course, the first thing, yeah. I'm sitting in the theater going, is this a vegan movie? Like, because I know Aronofsky's vegan. And it made me think, I don't know.
Well, like I just said, you know, your values are already vegan. It doesn't need to be an explicitly vegan movie to highlight some of the values. And it's true. What I really love about that movie is we do see a lot of examples of people caring, like an altruistic, "I want to help another person" sort of thing. And it's the same in veganism. You know, you don't have to know another person to want to help them and to make sure they're not having harm done to them.
Totally. Right. Yeah. The idea is that you don't have to. Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to see it. I'm really looking forward to it. Although I've heard that,
are you frozen?
Benny Malone just,
yeah.
Huh? What?
Oh, no, we're good. We're back.
Oh, Benny Malone back. Told me that, did I freeze for a second or something? Benny said that.
Yeah, it might have been on my end.
Oh, all right. Well, let's watch the, what do you think about this? This is the intro. Ooh. Let me see if we can see if we can play it real quick. Here we go. Oh, what is this your logo bullshit? Damn it. There you go. That's how the vegan sausage was made.
That's how it's made. You know what? Version 2.0 is going to come out next week. Thank you for being with us for that moment.
Failure. That's what I like. Ugh. I'm working too much, man. This is the problem. I'm doing too much.
Are you overextended? You're a little bit worn thin right now.
No, it's just that I keep on. I need to stop doing things for money.
Yeah, I get that.
I need to stop taking jobs that are only feeding the bank account and not the soul. That's the that's the lesson. I'm not overextended. I just keep on misprioritizing.
I find that unless I'm working on my own personal project, even if it's something that I love doing, I still feel like, oh man, I want to get, like right now I'm in the middle of a puppet build for a big client.
Yes.
And I love building puppets and doing puppetry, but there's a part of me that's like, I want this damn job to be done so I can get back to my art, which is crazy because like how many, you know, how blessed am I to be able to even be earning an income from making puppets in the first place? But I think it's, yeah, no matter what I'm going to be doing, I'm going to want to be doing my own thing eventually.
Totally. But the thing is, like, work gets in the way of life, and it shouldn't. It should be, there should be kind of a give and take. It's just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I've had jobs that really fed me, but I don't know. I need to stop taking jobs that just pay me and start doing jobs that just, that, you know, maybe might make something later. I don't know. Like this, like,
well, we're
like,
building a, yeah, you're building the media empire here. You got your Patreon fans going.
We do. We have some Patreon fans. Yeah. It looks like Jean is here. The real thing. Betty Malone's in the house. You know, we have our Patreon's growing and vegan media is going strong. The idea, it's interesting because I was talking to Fanny Pierre. You might know her. She was saying that, what media and production company. And I was like, interesting, media and production company. Maybe production is media and production company. Huh.
Why not?
So, yeah, why not? I can edit podcasts for vegans and things. I mean, that's the idea, right? Just try to build something where we're all working together to do something cool. And then hopefully,
yeah,
you know, turn gold out of this hay.
It's a VOC original, baby.
That's right. A VOC original. Exactly.
Well, yeah. Please. You know, so I was thinking a fun part of our show is that we talk about NFTs, but that's such a broad concept that after our show last week, I was sort of brainstorming and I pitched an idea. Hey, what if we each just highlighted one NFT project or NFT piece each week? And so, I have one of those ready to show if you'd like.
Yeah, show it. Do you have you? Okay. You can present, can't you?
Yeah, I'm going to present here. I'm going to share my screen. I haven't done this before, so let's see if I can do this successfully. All right, here we go. So this first one that I want to show is by one of my favorite artists. His name is Patrick Hughes, and he makes a type of hybrid sculpture painting that is called Riverspective, and it's not really loading too well right now, but let me go up here. So essentially what he does is in his works, which is loading right here, the pieces of the painting that seem furthest away are actually closest to you in physical space because of the structure of the painting. You see this one rotating here. And what seems to be furthest away is it's a reverse perspective. So as you move from left to right, viewing this thing in space, it's a sort of optical illusion. And I think that these paintings, he's an old British dude, and he sort of invented this this style of art. And I think it's really great in a sort of metaverse augmented reality capacity because of the 3D aspect of it. It really does work really well as you move around through space. So the idea is with metaverses and with augmented reality, we're going to be able to put AR paintings up in our physical homes and that we'll be able to see through, you know, viewfinders that we're going to wear on our faces. And also we're going to have these digital spaces that we're going to be able to exist in and live in. And there's an idea with NFTs that people are going to be like creating these spaces and decorating these spaces. And so this artist in particular, I really believe in for this sort of stuff. And he has a drop coming this week. Let me see. I'm going to go back here. I'm going to go back forward. So the drop is a piece called L'Amour that he made. It means love in French, from 2019. And he's got two different drops. One is an animated NFT and a fidgetal t-shirt. So the idea is it's a physical object that comes with a digital, NFT. And the animated part is the clouds. The clouds move back and forth. But the second one, the one that I'm more interested in, is this augmented reality NFT, which is what I kind of just showed you. So you're going to be able to put this up in your spatial space, for example, and look at this. And I think I'm going to go for it this week. It's £49, which is, I don't know the conversion rate, but if you're a British person. Go ahead. That's what I wanted to show.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, do you get a t-shirt? Like, you get a t-shirt if you get the thing. If you get the NFT, you get the t-shirt as well.
So there's two different ones. The animated NFT is kind of what I just showed you, how it's like, it's a video. It's like an MP4 video. And that comes with the t-shirt. And that's like for, I think, £100. But then for half that, you can just get the NFT augmented reality version, which I actually think is more interesting. I'm not very interested in having a physical t-shirt, but the AR thing it looks really, really cool. And there's 105 editions of each of these. There's a private presale that starts tomorrow for people who already hold pieces by this artist, and then a couple days from now it's going to open up to the public. So not financial advice, but I do love this art, and I do think it's going to grow in value over time.
I like that. It's, you know, mine feels really childish compared to yours.
No, not at all. I almost chose a poop emoji project.
The one I did show you the angry dick butt, so I'm not really I guess maybe I shouldn't be so I showed you the angry dick butt one, so maybe I shouldn't be so self-conscious. But I've been really eyeing this one, and I've already missed the one that I wanted to buy, but it's these Monomyth by Heart You, and ooh, they're really cute as hell. And the story is, so I like that Monomyth is a universal story about the transformation of the hero inside all of us. There's 10,000 of them. It's a, you know, generative project, but they look so sweet. And be brave and fear not. Embrace the challenge before you. Travel through the 7 worlds of inner space to physically transform, learn, and collect tokens of awareness. Your journey will expose you to the functions of consciousness, including intuition, thought, emotion, sensation, your shadow, aspirations, morality, conflict, and even death. If done with a pure heart, you will experience individuation through the transformative nature of experiencing the human condition in all its varieties. One last piece of advice, above all else, enjoy the ride. This is an excerpt from the Heart You Handbook of Helpful Information. And I just like the vibe so much that I keep on like missing the one that I wanted, and I keep on like, oh, I'm going to buy this one that I don't. So I think I'm just going to do it. Like, they're not really horribly cute. Yeah, I really like them. There was one that was this rice one with tofu stacks on it, and I liked it. I like that it's all about like the individual heart, but the heart that's inside all of us, and like I just dig it. And then if you look at their, let me see if I can scroll back up and see if I can't. It's giving me a little bit of a lag here for some reason. Maybe I've got so much probably have Adobe Premiere still open. Let me see. I probably still have my editing software open. Hold on a second, because I was editing the intro that failed, the fail intro.
I think it was a win. I got a good laugh out of that. Your logo here.
Your logo here, and I totally uploaded the logo. I don't know why the logo. Maybe the logo just didn't. It just didn't like my Adobe Illustrator logo, I guess.
It's a tarnished program.
It's a tarnished program. They just didn't like it, right? Let me see. Should I buy this mushroom one?
I mean, if you really want it, this could be a cool experience for us to watch you how an NFT is purchased.
Let me see if I have enough money in my wallet. It's $25. My MetaMask just came up. Let's see if there's enough money in there.
Okay. I like this one. This little blue heart you got here.
Yeah. Let's see. Gas is $5.81. All right. I'm buying it.
He's doing it, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. This is an NFT purchase happening on the left. This is a first for vegan futurists.
It's a first for vegan futurists. Yeah, I think it's, you know what, why not? Life is short, and I think they're cute. Yeah. And I wanted a blue one, so there you go. I wanted the rice one with tofu stacks on it because I thought it was more vegan, but I figured the blue one's the one to go with. And then, let's see. All right, I can view my purchase. He's got a little friend. And here we go. Now it's in mine. Look at the sky cow I have.
Hey, sky cow. That's looking good.
I got a sky cow. There we go. $22.55 later. Oh, I have an offer already on the table for it. There you go.
All right.
Someone's already. Hey. Looks like someone's put an offer out for it.
We can watch Sky lose money in real time, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Just only buy $3. It and immediately sell it for less. Yeah.
Immediately sell it for less money. But look, it's got the moon star in the background. Okay. And then we have Imagine Body, Insight, and Space Lass.
So these properties that you're looking at right now are like different rarities for someone who might not know. So each of these is valued differently depending on their rare traits is one way of looking at these PFP projects.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of these PFP projects, they have different rarities. People will then start sniping these rarities, but 2% faces bliss. Anyway, it's a blue heart, so now I have one. I like
she
the
looks
hair
great.
Too.
Yeah. Little doll.
She's got a little friend that looks like my girlfriend Karina's favorite Pokemon is Ditto, and I think it kind of looks like Ditto, this creature here.
Perfect.
But so what's really interesting is when you go into these projects, we have let me go back to the actual collection. Go back to the collection. Usually on OpenSea, they'll have the Discord and the website and the Twitter. But if I go to the website.
Oh, those are cool.
Yeah, there's like special ones. They're sold out, view and collect mono. It just doesn't really tell you much of it about it on the website. But I'm sure that their Discord tells you more. Or their Twitter. Let me see.
Yeah.
Usually
a lot of Twitter stuff going on this week.
Oh my gosh. So look, I'll follow them on Twitter. I'll follow them on Twitter and then I'll say I got it. I'll tweet that I got it. But Cradle Team for Smooth Mint.
You're in the community.
Yeah. I'm gonna follow this Bueno NFT. I don't know about that. Bueno NFT. What's Bueno NFT? Try our new smart contract deployer. All right. Bueno NFT. I'm totally going to check out that. I'd love to chart because I'm looking at doing more projects and trying to use different. I'm going to do one on the OpenSea platform like you always do because you do it on OpenSea, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm thinking of deploying my own contract via Manifold for my next one.
So I looked at Manifold actually this weekend and I'm still a fan of Easly. I think Easly is like just so much easier and they do their own, they take 5% just like Manifold, but it's a good system. I don't know. I really dig having your own, cause you kind of have to have your own website if you're going to push them with Easly, but I like that. And you make your own website and you mint through like everybody else does. Like it doesn't start on the secondary market. Like when you do it on OpenSea, you're starting on the secondary market, which has its ups and downs, downsides. But I want to look at more. I'm going to check out this Bueno NFT and see if there's anything cool about that. But anyway, so now I have an NFT. Maybe I should have gotten this guy. God damn it. This guy, I like this guy with the mushrooms.
There was some interesting news in the VV.
The VV
are
world?
Are you still here? Yeah, there you are. The VV world. So they're releasing a Banksy NFT.
Are they?
Yeah, but it's not approved by Banksy.
Weird.
Because there's a loophole in the law. I don't know which country this is, but if something is public graffiti, then it also becomes part of like public domain that you can then brand and sell.
Yeah.
So for example,
sense.
Guess, the company Guess took advantage of this loophole recently and just released a Banksy line. And Banksy commented on it and said, hey, don't buy that. Everybody, they stole my stuff. Go steal Guess, is what Banksy said. Mm-hmm. And then so I thought it was really interesting that Vivi would seemingly, allegedly, as far, to my understanding, they're taking advantage of the same loophole. So I don't know. I'm not going to buy this NFT, even though I'm a huge fan of Banksy. It doesn't feel legitimate if the artist is not behind it. If it's a living artist and they're not behind it, it feels like just an illegitimate thing. And he's notorious for not licensing his work. That's like he just doesn't do that. So
he's practically an anarchist, so it doesn't really seem like something that he would be into, does it?
Yeah, exactly. And I hugely respect him. I think he's a fantastic artist with a lot to say, which is kind of rare in the art world, even among some famous artists. It's like, what are you saying with this? But Banksy, it's always like he's saying something so clear with his work. You seen the one where it's like the animals going off to the slaughterhouse, and they're all hanging out the side of a truck. It's like a physical art piece he did, but all of the animals are these like stuffed plush cutest like animals, and they're all it's just like so heartbreaking and illustrative of what's going on.
I wonder Banksy I think Banksy's vegan. I'm gonna claim him. I think Banksy must be vegan.
Like, welcome to the club, Banksy.
hey, Banksy's vegan. I should just start a whole thing. Like, yeah, of course Banksy's vegan. Why not?
Yeah, that wouldn't be.
Paul Campbell asked where we are. We're both in California, though, about an hour and a half-ish away from each other, depending on traffic. Like, I don't know.
I don't know if you can see. Today I'm out in the middle of the desert.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're in the desert. Yeah,
I'm in the desert today, but I'm still in California.
You're still in California, but like you're out in Joshua Tree.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Big blue tent.
I actually think about Joshua Tree a lot because I really believe that, I don't know, in the future, since we're talking about the future, I really want to, if I could just sell everything I own and live out in the middle of nowhere in some place with a swimming pool in Joshua Tree with an internet connection, I think I could be happy. I would love that.
My wife, no, so it doesn't work for us. She's like a city center sort of gal. So for her, it's like she feels like she's gonna get murdered if we're out in the middle of nowhere. She's like, well, someone's just gonna come and rob us and kill us in the middle. Why wouldn't they? And she's got a point, you know, sort of. Yes. I guess
buy a dog, buy a exactly. That's not a very vegan thing to say. Buy a gun. I don't know. Like the chances of you being harmed out in the middle of nowhere is unlikely. Like people generally don't kill each other in the middle of nowhere, and you're frozen. You're frozen, my friend. Something's going on with your internet today, Jess. He might still be able to hear me. But it's interesting when people are trying to go with their loved ones to move and where you want to live, and you can't go those places because the person that you love won't go with you. I feel that way about New Mexico. It's hard. RIP vegan activism then if you live there, Sky. Why can't I do vegan activism in the middle of nowhere? I can do it from here if I have the internet, can't I? I think I could do it from right here from the comfort. I could do it online is the point. It's totally doable. Jess is temporarily frozen. Yes, he is, but that's okay. He'll be back, I'm sure, unless something happened in Los Angeles. It did a meteor could have passed through, a solar flare could have passed over Los Angeles and missed Orange County. Is that possible? I don't know. But, I always think, I don't think that you have to stop doing, you know, activism just because you live in the middle of nowhere. That's what the internet's for. You can still do it. LOL, Ditto is purple and is not heart-shaped. What do you mean? The heart was holding a Ditto. Do I need to bring it back up? The heart was holding a Ditto. What do you mean? Yeah, the heart was holding a Ditto, man. What are you talking about? Here, I'll share it again just so you can see it. Share screen. Let me see. Chrome window. Here it is. All right. Add to stream. There it is. See, he's holding a Ditto. My Monomyth 8607 is holding a Ditto. There's the heart. See? Joanna, do you see this? Which heart? There's the heart. And he's holding a Ditto. A two-faced Ditto for some reason. And she's hugging. She's hugging the... Yeah, see? Now you can see it. My heart-shaped monomyth is holding. Yeah, it's in the hands, right? She's holding on to it. It's interesting. I'm not sure what this is supposed to be, but it looks like, let me see. Imagine spacesuit space last green. Okay, imagine background moon star. Imagine body insight. Face is bliss. Bliss insight. So I don't know what this little creature is, but I'm going to say it's a Ditto. It's a two-faced Ditto. It's got two faces or four eyes and two mouths at least. And I think it's great. I don't know. I think it's a Ditto. Yeah. Looks like Sweep Ninja bought it for 0.15. So it's going up in value. It's not gone down. So, you know, maybe it'll be going up. Who knows? With the way crypto markets work these days, it's hard to tell what will happen next, but it's a whole thing. You know, and when it comes to, oh, it was smaller before and you couldn't see it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Now you know that I'm not losing my mind. It's a purple Ditto that she's holding. You know, with the crypto market, the way everything's gone down, it's getting a little scary. I mean, today crypto was at, I don't know, yesterday I looked at it. I haven't looked at it today, actually. But crypto market, Ethereum's at $1,100. And that is low, man. That's like one of the low, that's the lowest I've seen it, maybe. Like anything under, anything around $1,000 is so low for Ethereum that it's actually kind of scary. But it looks like it's going back up. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know. It's such a rough time with all these big flips happening. Tether just sold a bunch of Solana and it went back to, they sold it for Ethereum. See, Tether is the one that's a stable coin. The whole idea is to make big flips, to keep it at exactly $1. And that's just something that Tether's into, right? And same thing with USD. Look at these are the top four, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and then two that are tied to the dollar, which sounds ridiculous. BNB is number five. Sancta number five. If you are investing in BNB, I hate you. Same thing with Binance. Both of these should be far, far down. Doge went up to nine, and it's at 7 cents. 7 cents, which is like half of what I bought it for. And then, but look at Solana's down to 18. 18 used to be top 10, but because these stable coins sold all their Solana, it's just taken this huge nosedive. So it's been rough on Solana. But the whole crypto market is kind of in the tank right now. It just sucks. Oh, Jess is back and he's badder than ever. What's up, Jess? Hey, you're back.
I had some Wi-Fi issues.
I kind of saw that one coming, but I thought, you know, sometimes these Wi-Fi issues resolve themselves.
Yeah. You know what happened is I thought I was on my Ethernet, but I was not. And it'll get you.
Yeah, it's a rookie move, but
rookie mistake.
I'm on Wi-Fi, but the router is right next to me. So I feel like I'm being microwaved at all times.
Yeah. But you know what? At least you have a good connection.
I'm blessed. Another blessing I should count. I should be grateful for.
Hashtag blessed. I forget what we were talking about, but anyway, something I did want to talk about today.
Yes.
I have a question about the vegan future. So the future is vegan, right?
The future is vegan.
What is going to happen to all the vegan activists when the future is vegan? What are these people going to do with their time and with their effort?
Well, okay. So I think most activists, okay, that's such a good question. So in the vegan future, which I think will happen in our lifetimes, I think that the vegan world is one that does not come without constant struggle. It's just like today we live in a world where all thinking people are against, I don't know, race, slavery. Let's take slavery or human trafficking, one of the bad ones, right? We know that like sex trafficking and sex crimes and sex slaves, that's all really evil shit. This should be done away with completely. And yet we still need activists to bring us up that, hey, sex trafficking is still a huge problem. We need to, people are doing it under the guise of other businesses or just doing it under the cover of night. And we need to be fighting it constantly. Like I was looking at a charity that their whole thing is raising money so that they can send mercenaries basically into rescuing people who are being used as sex slaves. That's the charity. It's a 501c3, and they're raising money to pay soldiers of fortune, to go in and save people who are being enslaved. That's what's going to happen. That's what the vegan activists will end up doing. Like, I would love to live in a world where that's the type of shit that it's almost gone, right? It'll never be completely gone, but the idea is that we always fight it.
Question for you. If we were living in a world like, let's say 200-300 years ago, where human slavery was the norm, do you think you would be a vegan activist, or do you think you would be an anti-slavery activist?
Roger Yates said, we'll all go to bed. I think that they're the same thing. So
okay,
that to me, if you're an anti-slavery activist and you're not vegan, then are you really against slavery? or are you just virtue signaling? Because veganism is a stance against oppression and slavery. So yeah, I'm against slavery. So of course I'm vegan. Like, I'm vegan, of course, because what else am I supposed to be?
So the other question around these ideas that I have is there something right now that we're not really 100% aware of that's not like right there on our radar that in the future activists like us are going to be talking about, you know? So, for example, if we were 300 years ago talking about being vegan, someone might come and say to us, well, listen, man, we've got human slavery. Let's take care of this. And that might be a fair thing to say. But, you know, what's next is my big question. Or is it, and then I had another idea with this. I was like, well, veganism is not a new idea. For thousands of years, people have been talking about this. So whatever's next, I feel like is something that's probably already in the ether, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's always that each generation seems to have its thing that we have to go, what the hell were they thinking? They put lead in everything. Lead was in everything. What do you mean lead was in everything? But as far as like social injustices, I think, okay, first of all, women are treated as second class citizens in almost every country in the world. And even though I think we're better about it here than other places, it's still a problem here. So that's one. I don't know. If there's things that are in the air. I think privacy and the way that we're kind of easily manipulated by the media and social media is working, the internet and how we're connected. I think that's probably something that we'll start looking at and like passing serious laws about. But that's got to happen. That's already in the air, isn't it? What do you think? In the future, people like Tristan Harrison's already talking about how we need to start passing legislation to regulate how the media is affecting us and protect us from it.
Citizens United was a huge mistake to overturn that and, you know, get money out of politics, all this stuff. I think a big one is for me personally, I'm very much against the idea of like landlords, for example. The idea that somebody who has a certain amount of capital can use that to just make sure they never have to work anymore. And other people are working essentially for them and, you know, siphoning off actual value to this whole leech class of people, I think is something. And, you know, you watch these reality shows and it's like these young couples are on there. And just last night, this young girl, she was like, you know, investments are very important to me. My goal is within 7 years to have enough investment properties that I'm just living off the income of that, me and my family. And it's like, that's an aspirational thing. But I think it shouldn't be, because what it really is just another form of, you know, indentured servitude, in a sense.
And also, like, what value are you providing? What service are you providing? What is the point of you? It's interesting that you say that, because when I went to Grow Video Live, they brought out a bunch of these successful, you know, YouTube entrepreneurs and content creators, and all of the ones that were really, really big and famous who made their money dancing on TikTok or whatever are now landlords. They own like 7 houses, the whole kind of thing where they own a bunch of houses, rent them all out. And that is their income. And their income is then tax free because they make videos about it. And they're now able to say that this is my job.
Yeah.
So not even paying tax. They're not even providing that value. They're not even paying their fair share.
Yeah. So that's just something that, like, I personally don't feel okay participating in. Like, even the idea that, like, oh, I can save some money and get a second place. And I don't even own my first place, but like, the idea that I would be getting income from someone else paying a mortgage that I have, it just feels icky, you know?
It feels icky, but does it also feel like, wow, I mean, how else? Like, if everyone else is doing it, how am I supposed to keep up? Like, I don't know. I think about that a lot because I'm not in a position I could ever do that. But maybe someday, let's say all of a sudden I had $1 million. And I bought a house and I rented it out to a family. I don't know. Someone else is going to do it, right? So weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so I think in the future, questions around this sort of thing are going to start to be more at the forefront, because for a lot of people, you know, it's our generation and younger, home ownership is not the American dream that it used to be. You know, it's not possible. And that, I say America, but this is around the world too. It's happening in Britain, Australia. And the idea that property, a place where people would live, would also be for other people an investment vehicle, I think is like an unsustainable idea that is just, we're bound for disaster with this thing.
It does kind of make me sick when I hear about people like in the economic downturn. I knew a guy, he wanted to, like, 3x30 was his whole thing. You still hear it sometimes. Every once in a while, I still hear the 3x30. It's three houses by the time you turn 30 so that you can own one and rent out the other two, and those two pay for it, and they're all paying, like, you're living for free, right? And I remember in 2008, a lot of people lost their shit, right? Lost everything. And some of the people that I knew in the restaurant business, they would tell me, yeah, I had five houses and lost all five in the economic downturn. Like, maybe you shouldn't have had five houses. Like, maybe you wouldn't have had it. Maybe you wouldn't have lost everything. Maybe all of us wouldn't have lost everything if you hadn't owned five. If everyone had enough and you didn't have five like an asshole.
Yeah.
Then maybe we all could have kept our one, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like Monopoly, and people forget that Monopoly was a game that was invented to show how fucked up this whole system is.
Did it work out that way, though?
No, and again, it becomes this aspirational thing, like, oh, I'm going to own the most properties. But no, that's not the moral of the story. Like, the moral is it's going to be disaster. And the proof of it, Monopoly is not very much fun for everybody else who's playing except for the person who's winning. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same in our system. Not to say that, like, you know, we're having a bunch of fun. I bet we have more fun than Bezos and Musk and all those dudes combined.
Definitely more than Musk. I don't think Musk is having much fun these days. I think if Musk kills himself during all of this, I would not be surprised.
You mean like an intentional, willful suicide, or just like work himself to death?
No, I was thinking like a suicidal situation. I think that he's like, because mental illness is one of those things that attacks the rich and famous very, very easily, because the people around them don't say anything. Like Howard Hughes, everyone's, that's just Howard. That's just Howard. Michael Jackson, that's just how Michael is.
Yeah.
You know, likes to sleep in the same bed as boys. It's just Michael. What are you going to do?
Michael and with Prince, just like this drug abuse that's sort of just like, you know, they have enough money to do it and they have a doctor who's going to help.
The doctor said it's okay. What's the problem?
Yeah.
I'm sure Musk is probably full of amphetamines and vitamin injections like JFK used to get, you know, like, of course, how is he pulling these hours? He's sleeping
I'm pretty sure that it's like a thing. He's autistic, right? He's like on the spectrum.
That's what he says. Yeah. He says he's on the spectrum. Yeah.
So
I don't know how much I believe it, because he could just be an asshole.
He could just be an asshole. That'd be a funny game show. Are they on the spectrum or are they just an asshole? Sometimes it's both, you know, just because you're on the spectrum.
Well, yes. But a lot of people use, like, there's a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where like the little kids, like, screaming at his mother and he's just a little piece of shit, and they're like, you can't say anything because he's on the spectrum. And it turns out like he's not diagnosed, he's just on the spectrum, and the kid's just an asshole.
Yeah. But
because I think by saying everyone's on the spectrum is like belittling people who are actually inflicted or afflicted by the by mental illness. It kind of belittles all of mental illness by saying stuff that like, oh, well, Elon Musk is on the spectrum. Okay, I guess. But that's not a get out of jail free card.
No, I think it explains some of his quirks maybe. And for me, yeah, it makes it a little bit easier to be patient with his eccentricities, but not with his like sociopathy. And just, it seems like he treats his workers very poorly. It's no excuse for shit like that. It's no, and by the way, I was thinking about this morning, like, Trump's back on Twitter.
Kanye's back on. He's not back on.
Though. No, but he's like invited back. You know,
right, he's reinstated.
Yeah,
but like
he's reinstated. How do you feel about this? Like, let's say he just came back and started tweeting today. How would you feel? Would you leave Twitter for this, or how do you feel?
I would leave Twitter. Well, I left Twitter last time. I wasn't on Twitter for a long time because he was kind of sucking up. It just wasn't fun anymore. And I didn't like close my account. I just deleted it from my phone. And that's mm-hmm. how I do it. Like with same thing when Facebook got really messed up during basically 2016. I was one of the people that was like, whoa, this has gotten a little bit out of hand. Like I definitely, I'm not saying that I was prescient or anything, but I definitely saw like, wow, this ain't fun anymore. And it's really kind of hurting me every time I go on Facebook or go on Twitter. I'm not laughing. I used to laugh. Twitter, I'd be like, ha ha, laughing at everyone's funny shit.
Funny jokes.
Yeah. And then I was like, not anymore. I don't laugh at all anymore. And so like that's, I hardly laugh now when I go to Twitter because of all this Elon Musk shit. But
I use Twitter just for art right now. That's all I look at. That's all I'm involved in. And so it's the idea that like, and I got off of Spotify with the whole Joe Rogan thing. So I'm not above leaving a company when I feel like what they're about is like not cool. But also I'm very sensitive to the idea that speech, even and especially when we disagree with it, should not be censored. And where the question there is, and as a vegan person, I felt that like my reach on Facebook, for example, had been killed by the algorithm for a long time because nobody wants to hear about the vegan stuff.
Right.
It's if you post a photo of your cheeseburger, the algorithm loves that. But if you say, hey, cheeseburgers aren't cool, we shouldn't be eating them, the algorithm doesn't love that. So I got frustrated with the algorithm in my activism a while ago. And the question is, where's the line? Because like, should Trump be able to come on Twitter and incite an insurrection? Like, no, but also there's probably a lot of shit that he says that I disagree with that is in the realm of like, you know, discourse that should be allowed to be public.
I don't know, man. It's rough. Like if you start talking about anti-Semitism, it's really fast. Like shit happens so quickly when Kanye starts saying the Jews and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Even though what Kanye said really was kind of innocuous, like I'm going DEFCON, like he doesn't even know what DEFCON is, right? Like it's kind of, it's like a child saying something about the Jews. And it was so childish and dumb. But we got to be careful about this shit. When people start talking about the Jews, it gets really scary very, very quickly.
Sure. But is the solution to that to silence the speech about that? Like, I'm not sure that cutting that off and silencing it is the medicine that needs.
It didn't happen in darkness. It's not like they just silently did it. It was a very loud, no, we are not going to allow this to happen. That is a different type of censorship. If it's like, I get what you're saying. Like, if we go back to like the 1960s and the Smothers Brothers are being censored because of their stance on the Vietnam War, and it's all happening in some dark room, in the editing room, right? The Smothers Brothers make a thing. They're saying something about the Vietnam War, and then it gets to the editing thing, and someone from, I don't know, CBS, NBC, ABC, one of these big companies then goes like, yeah, it's twirling their mustache. No, we don't like this anti-war stuff. And they cut it out, and we, the public, we're never the wiser. That is evil censorship. But the type of thing where it's like, whoa, Kanye, you're not allowed to talk about the Jews that way because of the history of the world. You're not allowed to do that shit, Donald Trump, you stupid asshole. You're not allowed to incite. That's different. It's like this loud censorship. It's a repercussion. It's not really censorship. It's
drawing a line and it's saying this behavior is not acceptable.
And it's proof that actions have repercussions.
Yeah.
Like that's what bothers me about like Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle, you're allowed to say what you want, bro. But the thing is, you will be loudly, loudly canceled. It's not like the Smothers Brothers, where it's quiet.
Yeah, I felt for a while because I was in the comedy community here in Los Angeles. You know, I've been in it for years, and I'm talking like 10 years ago. There was an idea that like comedians should be able to say whatever they want on stage, full stop. And sure, comedians should be able to say whatever they want on stage. I agree with that 100%. You can go up and say whatever you want, but also the audience is able to feel and speak about this however they want too.
Yes.
You know, maybe not during your show yelling out, but if they want to go home and write a blog about it, or if they want to have an opinion about it that they want to share with you, or even if they want to yell out during your show.
Depends on how it moves them. That's kind of the danger about being on. That's why being on stage is scary. Like, that's why, that's, I mean, shit, dude, Shakespeareans used to have people bring rotten vegetables to the theater just in case it was bad.
Yeah.
Like,
that's part of the deal of being a performer. And even doing what we're doing right now, I'm aware that if I fuck up and say something that is, you know, it could vary, you know,
it's, or if, like, you don't, and someone just wants to talk shit, like, that's part of it. When I was in the poetry world, I used to say, you know what? I miss the jazz world. The jazz world used to be, hey, if you don't like it, don't clap. And I used to say that because with when I used to do poetry readings in the Bay, in San Francisco Bay, it would be a lot of times when you were at – it's interesting. If you're with initiated, they understand, like, don't clap between each poem. Clap at the very end of the set. Like, you don't – you sit there and you listen, and at the end you clap. Or if something moves you, go ahead, but it's not like that. And sometimes if I were in a place, or you'll be there all night. And so sometimes in a place like doing a reading at a bar or something, I'd say, all right, folks, if you guys haven't been to a poetry reading before, this is how it works, just so you know. But then I would say, and if you don't like it, don't clap. Because I'll never get better. You'll never get better. The world of poetry won't get better by you just fucking clapping for everything you hear. And I don't know, man. I wish it were more. Like, same thing with the show. Like, this is why if you don't like it, that's cool. Then don't come back. Call me shit, whatever. But I don't want to just, like, I don't know. I don't like the participation trophies. That's one thing I agree with when it comes to these, like, with these conservatives and, like, the 16th place trophy for 16 people participated, and there's a trophy for 16th place, you know.
Well, it's those adults who give those trophies out to kids are just adults with hurt feelings from when they were kids that they never resolved, and there's a better and easier way to do that than giving everybody a trophy.
But that's what Dave Chappelle wants. He wants the trophy for showing up and working hard. No, you don't get a trophy for showing up and working hard. You get a trophy for making people laugh, Dave. And if you're not making people laugh anymore and you're making people cry instead, that's not what we paid you to do. You don't get a trophy for that.
Chappelle, I feel like I would have given him a pass if it was just like once where he talked about this.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh shit, I walked into a minefield. This isn't what I'm out of my element. You know, my bad. But he didn't. He went back.
Doubles down,
goes back to the well of talking about trans people. And it's like, Dave Chappelle, you're an old cis man, and you probably aren't the, you know, maybe you should sit back and listen right now for a good 10 years if you want to say something about it eventually. You know, I don't know.
Well, realize this isn't your shtick. The other thing is, like, it was kind of funny a couple times. Like, it's okay. It pushed the envelope a little bit, poked some bears, you know.
And I don't think he's a hateful person. I don't believe that he has hate in his heart towards that community.
But the future has to be a world where we're not clapping for everybody. I totally agree with, like, this everyone gets a medal. He's one of those ones. He just wants a medal. And then he's like, whoa, you're canceling me. No. No, we're not. You're facing the repercussions of your fucking craft.
Yeah. Get out there and show us something that we're going to want to laugh at. Make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's your job, bro. Like, your job. This is what pisses me off about, Will Smith and Chris Rock. Chris Rock gets up there, does his job. He was doing his job, which is get up there and make some jokes about the people, push the buttons, take the piss a little bit. And then someone beat the shit out of him for it in front of everybody. And it's like, yeah, no, he was just doing his job.
Yeah, and the reaction to what he said, even if what he said was 1,000 times worse than what he said,
yes,
it's not an excuse for physical violence. And when we show that to the world, what we're doing is normalizing that sort of physical violence, makes it more dangerous for everybody. There shouldn't be anything. And honestly, I was talking to my wife about it. She's like, you know what? If someone said some shit about me on stage and you got up and slapped them, I would be furious at you.
Yes.
I would be afraid of you. And I'm like, yeah, totally. I get that.
Because what happens when she says something that you don't like? Yeah. You're going to slap her too?
Yeah. That's not
how
we solve
our problem. People say shit you don't like, you just beat them up?
Mm-hmm.
because this is the problem. This is Donald Trump. This is what the problem with Donald Trump is. He gets on Twitter and freedom of speech, but this is not freedom of speech, man. Like, it's okay to censor people for doing harmful things, especially in the light of day. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. I've been saying, I don't know who said it first, but I've been saying it my whole life. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. I'm probably quoting it from somebody. I'm sure I didn't make it up myself, mm-hmm. but I feel like I did. I've been saying it so long. And if you are going to censor people, you do it in the light of day. And that's what Twitter did. They didn't secretly like cut out parts of his tweet. They didn't like secretly remove the tweet that mm-hmm. that Kanye did. That would have been sinister if he tweeted and they removed the tweet. That's bullshit. Yeah. That's what TikTok does. It'll remove your video.
They're shadow banning you, yeah.
No, instead what they should do is put a big red thing on it saying this is wrong.
So we don't approve. Who's the committee that decides this is wrong?
Yeah, well.
That's the big question. Because the public right now is against a lot of forms of vegan activism. I was accused last week of being a bully and of putting targets on people's backs for calling out individual puppeteers in the business, which I see is the same as criticizing a model or a celebrity for wearing fur. You know, it's your public figure and you're choosing to do this thing. But then it got turned around to me and suddenly I'm being a big cyber bully for just trying activism. So it's like, there's a lot of people who would want to silence my speech on this. So I am, even though I disagree with a lot of the stuff, I'm really reluctant to have it just be like a big red no button.
Yeah, but that's a whole thing. Like, if they just removed your, here's the thing, that's discourse. Like, it's okay to say, oh, you're cyberbullying. Well, I'm not actually. I'm saying that you're the bully for, I don't know, slitting the throat of a lamb or something, right? Activism has to be in that kind of liminal space. We have to be in that liminal space. Think of like the direct action of kidnapping the pigs at the Excelsior farm, right?
Yeah.
Wayne Shea and I forget the other guy's name right now, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, Wayne Strong, I think. But yeah, those two, they just got acquitted. Great, good for them.
Yeah. Right. They got acquitted because they were charged with burglary, and it wasn't burglary. It was liberation. It was freeing of an animal. It was rescue.
Yeah.
And that's a fundamental change in the way we're looking at animals, that animals aren't property. Whoa. If you're rescuing an animal, it's very bizarre, because what does that say? But the point is, they did have to face those consequences. Actions do have consequences. And we are in that liminal space where, did they break the law? Of course they broke the law. Of course they did.
Yeah, that's not the point. Harriet Tubman broke the law.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, that's my point, is that they are criminals. Activists sometimes are criminals. When Animal Rebellion does the milk protest where they're dumping all the milk out on the floor, that's against the law. So that's vandalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's also probably trespassing at this point, because they probably trespassed everybody there by now. So if the same person shows up twice, that's trespassing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, breaking the law isn't morality. And to censor them, I don't know. Free speech is an interesting one, because it's now in the hands of corporations.
Yeah. We used to have an idea of the public square. And the idea with that is you should be able to say anything you want in public. So you can go, and in America at least, I can go and stand on a public sidewalk and hold up a sign. As long as I'm not inciting violence or, you know, slandering anybody, I'm going to be okay. I can say whatever I want, because we have an idea of the public square. You can go out and speak publicly. Well, what's happened in our digital age is the public square is now Facebook timeline. It's now Twitter. It's now TikTok. But you're right. What you just said, it's the corporations who are in charge now of, because it is a private company, you know, they can set the rules for whatever they want. But it's, and I really believe that in order to fix social media, we need to nationalize it and make it so the algorithm is open source. And so we do have more of an idea of, this is a public square and we can say what the fuck we want here. As long as we're not slandering or inciting violence, we should be okay.
It's interesting, the idea of the open source algorithm, that the algorithm should be transparent. That would be – that's an interesting thing. In order to make it for everyone. We should know what the rules really are. I guess that's the other thing, is that, yeah, there's a private company, they get to make the rules, but the rules seem inconsistent to most people. And I think that that's really the problem. I think that's the problem with COVID, right? That, oh, so wait, I go to LA and there's an entirely different set of rules. And when I go to Orange County and there's an entirely different set of rules, if I go to Arizona, that was the problem. If it's either the rules are for everybody, they're for nobody. It's like, you can't tell me. The same thing happened with seatbelts. When they started passing seatbelts in across the world, that legislation, they're like, well, how come some companies have seatbelts in their cars and some don't? And then they're like, well, you have a choice to wear it. Well, until they pass the law, everyone has to wear seatbelts. A lot of people just wouldn't, because fuck it. If everyone doesn't have to do it, I don't have to do it. It's this weird bandwagon effect. So,
well, it's like, you know, suddenly pot became legal and a lot of people who've never tried it before are like, well, I'm gonna try some pot. It's legal now. But it's like, do you believe that our laws are a really good guide for how you should be living your life? Like, for a lot of people, it's 100% that. Like, if it's legal, it's moral. If it's moral, it's legal.
The only thing a law affords us is consistency, supposedly, because we also know, of course, blacks are, you know, the law applies to them a little bit differently than it applies to people who look like me. But at least prima facie, we're supposed to be obeying, and the law is supposed to affect us equally. That's what it's supposed to do. And what Twitter is doing, and what I think is really the underlying issue with places like Twitter, is that no one believes that Donald Trump has been treated like everybody else. And has everyone else who's tried to incite violence against the Capitol, have they all been banned too?
The idea that as president, his speech was important to be like, that was how he communicated, you know? So it's like, can we ban him? Then are we now banning, you know, as president, it's important what he has to say, even if what he has to say is reprehensible. And I never personally considered him my president, because I thought it was, he didn't win the popular vote. And you know what, you don't have that for me personally, but he still was president. And, you know, if he said some shit, it had big impacts across the world.
Well, this is why freedom of speech is so interesting. So when he says things like go and be violent against the Capitol, why not? When he says things, when Musk took over and said he's going to bring Trump back, racial slurs went up like 800% or something stupid. Like, it went up so much, how many people were speaking a certain way on Twitter. Well, it has an effect. It just has an effect.
I find it kind of ironic that our country was founded on a violent revolution, yet talking about revolution now will get you banned from Twitter. You know what I mean? And I don't agree that the insurrection should have happened, or that anybody should be protected for having violent speech or inciting an insurrection. Mm-hmm. But I do find it ironic that that's how our country started.
Well, our country started with a violent revolution against a foreign power. That's a very different thing.
But it wasn't a foreign power at the time.
It was a foreign power. They were in England.
They were in England, but, you know, nominally we were England too.
Well, nominally we were, yes, the colony. We were subjects of the crown, I suppose. But the idea is that we were ruled unjustly by a foreign power. The people who were born here had no representation in that foreign parliament, and therefore were then instead of subjects, they were subjugated, right? So, I mean, that's a very different thing when you start talking about overthrowing the current democracy as president of the United States in order to subvert the will of the people, and end democracy as we know it.
For the record, and I think this is probably clear, I'm no Trump fan. I didn't vote for him ever.
No, I enjoy the conceptual idea of it's illegal now to talk about revolution, because I think talking about revolution is important, and talking about violent revolution is important. Inciting it so that you stay in power is a very different thing than the powerless vegan talking about, well, we need to end capitalism.
You're right.
It's a very different thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to stay in power. The difference between punching up and punching down, I suppose, is what I would say there. Let's see. Jess, Regan Russell did not survive the public square protest, and the trucker got only a slap on the wrist. Yeah, he was driving a truck. You know, the Regan Russell thing, is horrible. It's one of the worst things that's happened to a vegan activist. In Canada, she was intentionally run over by a truck driver. Yeah. And did he get a slap on the wrist? I don't really know how it all ended with him. I know that there's lots of lots of controversy around that one.
It's awful.
It's awful. Yeah, it's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing that happened. But I don't know that that was public square. It was on public property, supposedly. But Canada, I don't know. It's hard to even comment on Reagan Russell. But I will say this, that in the public square, that even the one that you, the idyllic one of everyone standing in the square, the loudest person is often the one who gets heard. And just being loud should not be the litmus test of virtuosity of ideas, right?
Well, and loud. And
the guy holding the gun usually gets heard the most too.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And with both of those things, being loud, for example, the best way to be loud in our modern day world is to have the most money.
Yep.
And oftentimes the people with the guns are the police forces, and they're protecting the status quo, which is run by the people who have the most money.
So there's I know I do this a lot, but it's a twitch of mine, and I'm sorry that you'll have to you have to endure. But for probably, I don't know, 100 or so years in American education systems, the play that they taught about Shakespeare was not Romeo and Juliet or Midsummer Night's Dream as it is today. In high schools, and the first play you would ever know about was Julius Caesar. Ah. And Julius Caesar was considered the American play written by Shakespeare. And the reason why is because it explores ideas of democracy. It's the only one where democracy is the thing that's at stake. That is the thing that's at stake. It's just democracy. If the whole play is about saving democracy. And then there's a wonderful part where two men give different accounts of the public in a public square, where you get Brutus is an honorable man. Oh, you get friends, countrymen, lend me thine ear. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me thine ear. You get these, the greater orator was the one who ends up winning the day. But the idea is bastardized. The idea is that the despot was someone to be missed. And that's who won. That's who won the day. Not the slayer of the tyrant, but the general of the tyrant.
Yeah.
So it really is a beautiful thing. That's what happens today. We have the foot soldiers of the tyrants are the ones who win the day in the public square.
Oftentimes, yeah. You know, there's always going to be a snake oil salesman out there too, you know, just because you are right and moral and righteous doesn't mean that people are going to listen to your idea and it's going to be the most attractive idea.
Absolutely.
You find that oftentimes in veganism, like for every vegan activist, there's, you know, a keto warrior out there telling you need to eat raw meat or whatever they're on this week. Yeah.
Keto warrior. You're absolutely right. I don't know. It's, so how do we fix it, right? I mean, how does freedom of speech? I honestly think that we have more freedom of speech than ever, and that we're working towards a freer world. And I wonder because I think of decentralization and transparency. And I know you and I talk about NFTs and NFTs as little art stuff, and I know we both enjoy those things, but I say it kind of pejoratively because it is just a little digital collectible right now. But the idea of it is that everything is transparent and we all see who's saying what, we all see who owns what. I mean, the reason why I think freedom of speech has been dead or dormant for so long is because of brainwashing. They told us not to talk about how much money we make, not to talk about religion, and not to talk about politics when we're drinking, right? Or when we're in social engagements. And the reason why they say that, it's taboo, right? Don't talk about how much money you make in social settings. bullshit. The reason why they don't want us talking about those things is because in social settings, when we start talking about how other people are making more money, we go and we kill those people. That's what happens in social settings when we start talking about who has all the money and which religious people, which religious leaders are the villains. We start going in human beings. That's what they do. They get together. If they start talking about that type of shit, they go and they start killing people. That's when the guillotines come out.
Yeah. Class consciousness.
Yeah. So they made that taboo. Well, now you can look up and find out exactly how much money everybody has, how that money's kept. It's the transparency of these things are going to be, I think, groundbreaking.
I agree. I feel right now the level of corruption is so staggering and unfathomable that it's difficult for anybody to even start to figure that out or to enter into it. Or and also back to the aspirational thing, I think a lot of people, even though they have class consciousness and they realize, you know, hey, I'm stuck where I'm at right now, there's a part of them that's like, well, someday I'm going to be a millionaire. And my life is going to be great. And I want this system to continue so that I can have my hypothetical $1 million someday.
As if these billionaires want you in their club. They don't want you. You're not invited. Like, that was so fucking crazy to me. Like, the Horatio Alger, like, rags to riches story is the reason why it's cliche is because it was always it was always bullshit. Horatio Alger, the guy who coined the term rags to riches, wrote, I think, I don't know, 80 novels about, you know, a boy who starts at a factory and then ends up working his way up to management and becomes well-to-do. They're never actually rich at the end of the story, by the way. He never writes them that they're then living opulently. At the end of each story book, his characters are well-to-do. They're middle management, you know. They're never part of – you're not invited to the 1% club. Like, you and I are not invited.
No, the only time, no.
I'm invited oh, by the way, you haven't seen The Menu yet? Have you seen The Menu
yet? No, I really want to. It looks really interesting.
So good. It really is kind of about what we're talking about, like this class war where he's like, are you with the givers or are you with the takers? Because I know a shit shoveler when I see one. And it's a celebrity chef saying it, and he's lost his love of the art and this whole illusion of what he wants. I love it so much, and it's not vegan, but you could totally like read into the system that they're kind of criticizing and see it as a vegan propaganda film. I like this. Has anyone heard this yet? Says Jean out of Costa Rica. James Cameron has a different word for vegan, futurivore. I try to come up with a good term for it because vegan has all those connotations. Futurivore. That would have been a good name for the show.
The futurivores. For me, it makes me think I only eat food that has traveled back in time through a time machine. I'm a futurivore.
I only eat stuff that was somehow killed in the future and brought back.
Yeah. It's not murder because it hasn't been born yet, technically.
Yes, it hasn't been born yet. It hasn't actually been born yet, so it can't be considered murder. Mm-hmm. Someone in the future who hasn't been born yet killed it.
Oh, give us time machines, and then we're going to have 2 weeks before that loophole starts to appear.
Well, that's like the story. I haven't seen the last episode, but Peripheral on Prime is kind of about that, where they create a divergent timeline in the past because of some weird data. They can send data back in time. They can't send people back in time. They can send data back in time. But what that does, it creates what they call a stub of history. And so it's like there's the main timeline they're all on, and they've created this divergent timeline that they can now exploit. And what they're doing with data, because they can still send it, they're testing medicine on these people. They're testing on because they're not even humans, right? They're all going to die anyway. They're not even part of our timeline.
So we could be in a stub right now. That could explain a lot about what's happening with our world. Yeah. We might be in a stub.
I think that's kind of the implication, like that we're in this darkest timeline where we're in the mirror, the Star Trek mirrorverse. We all have goatees and like the evil Spock.
Yeah, There's another Jess out there.
I like, yeah, exactly. No, no goatee in your case. I like the, I don't, you pull off the mustache and the soul patch without looking too evil.
Thank you. You know, I for years didn't have this, but I wanted one. And I worked in elementary education. So I'm like, I can't have a mustache and also work at an elementary school. That's people are going to look at me sideways. And then it was like a joke. And I like popped out of the shower one day and I was like, hey, and my wife, and she was like, you know, that doesn't look so bad. So I decided to keep it. We'll see.
I think I'm going to grow one until I get 1,000 subscribers.
Ooh. All right. Well, like,
I want to do a handlebar.
So everybody get out there and let's get some more subscribers.
Yeah, and I'll shave off this horrific thing off my face. I'm only growing it for Men's Health Awareness Month, which, you know, also speaking of, we don't have much time, but I do want to, do we have one more episode before the end of November?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So next November, on the 29th, I want to talk about supercomputers solving not only world hunger, but cancer and how we can, how men's health will be affected by that. Men's health in particular, but health in general, of course. But I like this Future Vore. We should change the name of the show to the Future Vores.
Sure. Let's call up Cameron and see if he wants to come on and do an interview.
Oh my God. Maybe how cool would that be? Get James Cameron, one of the, I'm not really looking forward to his movie, but I'm going to watch
Avatar.
It.
He founded one of the only vegan elementary and middle schools in the whole country. It's up really? In Calabasas. I forget the name of it right now. But when I was in education, I was like, because a big conflict for me was working at a school where they were promoting animal products to the young children. And it's like such a minefield, you know, like because I feel very strongly that we shouldn't lie to children about this.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of adults out there who don't even realize that when they're educating children about this, what they're really doing is perpetuating lies and myths. And so I sort of ran into this and I was like, I love working with young people and helping people learn about this world, but I can't continue to participate in this thing. And it was a conflict with me and the adults at the school. So I looked into it and I was like, there's a vegan elementary school in Los Angeles, Calabasas. Cool.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you have to have like your double master's degree to even be a teaching assistant there.
Of course.
Very well qualified, but someday if I'm able to, I don't have kids.
Pick up more degrees.
Yeah. No, I mean,
if you're going to have one, you want to send the child to exactly. The ICO. Yeah. Say, what are you going to do? Go back to school? Is that the,
no, that. No, I'm good on school for now.
I think it's, that's another thing I think will happen in the future, that there will be no more of this bullshit where go get another degree. Like Karina's going through this where she's like, I kind of want to work as a school counselor, just a degree in psychology. But it's like, okay, well, if you're in this state, you got to have a degree in, you have to have a master's. But if you're in that state, you don't. But if you're in this state, you got to have a PhD. But if you're in that state, it's such crazy. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Especially because meritocracy, is there anything to do with merit anymore? It's just like how many tests you got to take. And also, we all know education's bullshit after COVID, right? Like, you could just go and get a degree online in a quarter of the time. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
It's just a matter of money.
Yeah. For many careers, for many young people too, I think that unschooling is a good option and homeschooling can be a great option. I have a friend and they unschooled their children. So what this essentially means is like the child is just completely driven by their interests. And
Montessori, yeah, like they're whatever they're drawn to, you kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, and they're supported in this. And both of this person's children are now of like college age and they got accepted to great universities and they're going and continuing their education with this. So with the right environment at home, I think for young people especially, like the big advantage of school is the social aspect of that. You're hanging out with people your age and
you're learning how to take the SAT, you're learning how to take the standardized test, and you're learning how to fill out paperwork, and you're learning how to navigate the bureaucracy of these institutions. That's really what you're learning. And those are useful skills, I guess, except for the test taking. I think it's stupid. But like filling out paperwork and navigating bureaucracy is certainly a life skill that you're going to need. Yeah. So
But a lot of the time what they're doing is they're stifling your creativity and they're discouraging independent thought. And a lot of the time, you know, people come into school with these wonderful creative minds and they leave able to fill out that paperwork, but it's like you almost killed that person's spirit and it's a dangerous moment.
Well, some would argue that it's the process of separating the wheat and the chaff. Yeah. if you can't survive the if your imagination can't survive the stifling procedure, then you're
obviously you're the chaff.
Obviously, you wash right out, buddy. Back to the mines with you.
Yeah,
go back to the mines. That's I don't know, fucking schools. I think that in the future we'll be first of all, that schools will be vegan, of course. Because, you know, even Lauren was talking about it, vegan Sunday school in her Jewish preschool. They were cooking things with eggs for the kids, and she had this big argument with them. And okay, well, you're able to do all this kosher stuff, but you can't use applesauce instead of eggs. I'll just get you some applesauce and just use that. And there was this huge debate about it because of it.
At the school I worked at, we were with second graders. So these are like 7-year-olds. And in the garden class, there was an activity. Well, in the garden class, it was great because we eat stuff that we've grown in the garden. We learn about plants and all this stuff. And one of the activities was making some like suet for birds using seeds. And an ingredient in the suet was gelatin. And so I spoke with the teacher and I was like, hey, are we going to tell the kids how the gelatin's made? Because we talk about everything else. Are we going to tell them what this is? Mm-hmm. And it was decided that no, we're not going to tell them. And I was like, well, is it appropriate for us to be using gelatin right now? I got into it with the garden teacher a couple times. Another time we were learning about bees and they had like a bee specialist come in and she's telling us, you know, bees out in nature, if other bees come, they'll use their stingers to defend against their hive because other bees will sometimes come to try to steal their honey. And then literally in the same breath, she was like, and so that's why humans use smoke to get the bees to relax so we can take their honey. And I was like, wait, how is that different from another colony of bees stealing the honey? Like, aren't the bees not happy about this?
Like, and what do you think the stinger's for?
Yeah. In almost the same breath, she said, well, if we don't take their honey, the colony will split and then you'll have two colonies because the bees will have too much honey for one. And I was like, that's not a bad thing. We need more bee colonies. Leave the honey alone. I get into it with bee people a lot because they're like, well, if we didn't have honeybees, how would our food be pollinated? And I'm like, local feral insect pollinators exist and have existed for thousands of years. And they actually compete with your honeybees for these resources. And you're fucking up our whole planet by having this homogenized population of bees. Anyway, I could go on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, in the future, there'll likely be little drones.
Maybe
drones.
Yeah.
In peripheral, this show. This is why I tell you what. It's not a great show, but conceptually, I think you're going to really enjoy it. The show. It's well acted. Peripheral. It's on Prime. Like as far as like sci-fi concepts are concerned, it introduces a lot of cool shit because there's a whole thing about bees. And how in the future they're manipulating bees with pheromones to do what they need them to do. So they're using different pheromones to get the bees just to do their bidding. Cool. Which you've seen in other sci-fi, but you see that this is like, you know, it's kind of sort of post-apocalyptic. It's interesting. You'll like it. Do you think we talked about utopia and dystopia last week. And I was thinking about it this week, and I guess we should end the show with this, but do you think that humanity will reach utopia without first having to go through a major die-off event, dystopic future? Will we have to go through dystopia to get to utopia?
Well, we're in dystopia right now is how I feel. So yes, if we're ever going to get to our utopia, is there going to be a mass die-off event with our climate emergency that we're in right now? Maybe that's likely. You know, people living in coastal areas, Pakistan is like, I think a third of it is still underwater right now from the recent flooding. The world is already being heavily impacted by this climate emergency. People are dying. And like, part of me feels like we're going to kind of get back to like a pre-industrial sort of world. If things get super fucked up, you know, we're not going to be making microprocessors for computers and stuff like that anymore. Yeah. That's a potential future I could see. But yeah, honestly, I don't know. It's a little depressing for me because I see all these aspects of human nature that almost seems like it's like, oh, it's inevitable that we're just going to like keep killing each other. And I'd like to think and hope that we're evolving past that, but I'm not always sure about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm afraid when I hear about things like going to a pre-industrial age, and by pre-industrial, I think even the peak oil people talk about this pre-tech, really. We'll never go pre-industrial where there aren't like replaceable parts, but like kind of Civil War times, like late 19th century type shit, where we'll have photography and we'll have
blacksmiths and stuff like that.
We'll be able to make machines that can work together, you know, replace this sprocket, don't replace the whole machine kind of thing. Like that's really the industrial age. But when they talk about stuff like that, I think about, well, what did the world look like socially at that time? And if we're going to give up all of these kind of, I don't know, trappings of modern eras, won't we also be giving up the social justice of this modern era? Won't we be backsliding in that regard as well? And that's, to me, far more frightening than giving up my iPhone. Giving up a woman's right to vote is, because, I mean, if we're going back to the 1900s or the early 1900s or late 1800s, what happens to brown people?
You know, I feel like in some ways with our current Supreme Court, we're already on our way there, you know, where women's rights have been kind of gutted in a lot of places in our country with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. It's a scary time. And I think, you know, we got to keep shining the light on these issues, keep talking about it.
Yes, because sunlight is the world's best disinfectant.
Yeah, full circle.
Yeah, let me keep us on the... keep us going all the way back. I love the tangents, but I like bendy tangents, you know.
Thank you to our audience for listening to our ramblings.
Yes, and I'm terribly sorry that that I failed so miserably when it came to the opening. But the NFTs look good. Yeah, we're all cropped weird though too. I noticed that too, so I'll have to fix that.
All right.
But we'll fix it. Guys, thank you so much. That's our show. If you want to support anything that we do, please go to patreon.com/vegan, of course. If you want to join any of our, check out our cool shops. We have etsy.com/shop/vegan, of course. And also, of course, amazon.com/shop/vegan, of course. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow. We've got Vegan Time Tunnel with Roger Yates. And this Friday, we have Sarah Aviles, your friend
Sarah
from LA.
Is great. She's got a lot of good stuff to say. Tune in for all of Sky's shows. But yeah, Roger, Friday. Sarah, great shows.
We got a good show. All right, guys, thank you so much. I don't have an outro still, so it's just going to be... it's just going to go offline, really. I'm sorry. My outro was such a failure. Oh, well. Bye, guys.
Thank you.